And we're back, and this is the Taylor Report, and we're going to be talking shortly with Gary Engler. Phil Conlon has an announcement here.
Yes, Saturday night, December 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Royal Theater, 608 College Street. One-man play by Brian Gordon Sinclair, Hemingway's Hot Havana. This is a benefit for the victims of Hurricane Sandy in Havana. Again, that is at the Royal Theater, 608 College Street. All tickets, $25, and all the proceeds go to the relief fund for the victims of the hurricane in Cuba.
Very good. And by the way, I want to mention also Ed Herman and David Peterson have created a great article in, and I'm looking for the name of the journal, the Journal of Palestinian Studies. Which you could, or it might be Palestine study, but anyway, you can find it on the web, I'm sure. Do look for that. They are discussing this topic of the phony crisis, or they call it the Kafkaesque discussion of the Iran and nuclear weapons. So that's the Journal of Palestine Studies. And we are joined now by Gary Engler. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Congratulations on your novel, The Year We Became Us. It's Red Publishing, nice title, a nice outfit, and Fernwood Publishing. And you've tackled a bunch of topics, and I got to congratulate you. You have told a story about the first successful establishment of Medicare in Canada. The it takes us your book moves around the year 1962, but of course it goes back and forth with into the present, and you tie in the Cuban the so-called missile crisis. That's quite a challenge, by the way, for an author to do that in a novel.
Well, I was mostly inspired by living through the event that I wrote about. 1962 was a very pivotal year in Canadian history. Most Canadians to this day see our socialized medical system as being one of the most important factors in being a Canadian, and yet very few of us even know about the 1962 doctor's strike, which if it had had a different outcome, we probably wouldn't have Medicare in the way we know it today. So I for a long, long time wanted to write a novel set during that period. And again, if this was the United States, such an important event in American history, there probably would have been 20, 30 novels set during that time. But for some reason, and I suspect I know the reason why we don't want to talk about it, but for some reason Canadians seem reluctant to really get into the truth about how we got Medicare.
Yeah. Well, and it is an interesting phenomenon, and your book really tells it very nicely. You, of course, raise this the name that when we had the big debate some years ago, who's the greatest Canadian? Tommy Douglas did very, very well. And it was like all the main media said, okay, well, now let's go on to something else. But they don't want to revisit. I suppose some of it is just raw politics, right? Because you have to give credit to, as the book illustrates, it's the CCF led the fight. And maybe you could tell us a little about that. You said it wasn't a given. That was the doctors there in Saskatchewan said they were going to take a stand, and they had allies. American Medical Association.
Yeah.
And actually, as I read your book and I'm thinking about it, I think it's amazing they won. I don't know how they did it.
Well, it is interesting looking back at how much the provincial government, the CCF provincial government, was willing to fight the powers that be, and how just over the top the media especially was. I, as part of researching this novel, spent a lot of time in the archives reading newspapers from the period, primarily the Moose Jaw Times-Herald, which the novel is set in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, the third biggest city of the province. But I also looked up the other two big cities, Saskatoon and Regina's newspapers. And just as an example, on the day that the doctor's strike started, July 1st, 1962, the headline on the editorial page in the Moose Jaw Times-Herald was "The Day Freedom Died." And it's actually interesting to go look at the headlines during the paper or during the strike in these papers, because it strangely enough, it was kind of like, and I'm old enough to remember the coup in Chile and the disinformation campaign in Chile leading up to the overthrow of the elected government of Salvador Allende was a lot like the media going completely over the top in Saskatchewan. 1960 election, provincial election, which was fought primarily on CCF said, we want this socialized medical system. The opposition Liberal Party said, no, we're against it. The Saskatchewan doctors spent as much money as both the political parties put together, mostly funded, we believe. I've never seen the actual documents proving this, but we believe most of the money funded by American Medical Association and various insurance companies, the Liberals and the CCF were outspent by more than 2-to-1 by the doctors. Again, just over the top. You would not have your family doctor anymore. They want to create communism in Saskatchewan. Just over and over and over the top.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of amazing that the people of Saskatchewan held firm. And I do want to make this point, and I think it's a very important point that I learned both in thinking about and writing the novel and researching it, that without the unions, without the community groups, without the church groups that were mobilized at the time of the strike, that strike would have been won by the doctors, and there would have been no first Medicare system in the province of Saskatchewan, and probably the rest of Canada never would have got it as well. So I credit ordinary people.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. What about, how were they getting the word out? Was there a paper that they had? Was it Tommy Douglas and the others, just very great communicators? Or how were they getting the word out to get to fight the propaganda that they were up against?
Well, the provincial government actually did start I wouldn't call it a newspaper. It was more a newsletter because, as I said, the mainstream media was so over the top against them. But the primary way that they did it, and I actually remember this, I was quite young at the time, but...
You weren't a young ball player by any chance.
Yes, actually, I
like
was.
Like somebody in this book.
some of that is very autobiographical. Actually, most of the strange things that take place in the book are things that actually happened to me. So, I think that the main way the information got out was on a kind of person to person. Back then, the town that I grew up in, Moose Jaw, was very much a union town, for example, and people went to their union meetings, and that's where they learned about these things. And the communities especially got mobilized around creating community clinics, which was the main response of the provincial government to the doctor's strike. It was to work with community groups to create these doctors or these community clinics where doctors were hired mostly from Great Britain to come over, to have jobs, to be put on salary, to work as doctors in the community. And that's another interesting thing that we've kind of lost because we don't study our history often enough. If the provincial government had actually been willing to be a little bit more hardline towards the doctors, and they had backed the community clinics in a real way, on an ongoing way once the strike had ended. The form of the way medical care is delivered in this country probably would have been a lot different as well, because part of the compromise to end the strike was doctors retained control over who got to practice medicine in the hospitals, and those doctors who had that control on an ongoing basis, on the whole, refused to allow the community clinic doctors hospital privileges, which of course then led to basically the destruction of most of the community clinics. There are still some of them around today, but the vast majority of them were destroyed by that process.
By the way, does that involve, that was one part of the novel that I wanted to make sure I asked you about, was that, there, you know, your characters are quite pleased, as they should have been, proud of the effort they all put their shoulder into winning this, but they also used the word compromise. I wasn't too clear on what was given up, and is it the clinics? Is that what you're speaking of?
I think that was the main compromise, if you look at it from the point of view of the left. And of course, you know, the two main characters in the novel are one's a 12-year-old boy who's a left winger, and one's a 13-year-old girl who's a right winger, and her father is a doctor. So of course she's on the other side, and she sees the compromise in what was the compromise in a very much different fashion than what the Roy, the boy character, sees the compromise as. But certainly for Roy, the compromise would be, you know, we had to give up all the things we wanted, and the most important one was the community clinics. Mm-hmm. And from the point of view of Kathleen, the girl character, I think just the fact that Medicare was created was really a loss.
Oh, fatal, absolutely. Yeah. Because freedom turned out didn't die. I mean, it's Saskatchewan today. Can you imagine confronting all those people? I shouldn't say confronting, but just dealing with the kinds of headlines they wrote, as you said, the day that freedom died and all that. People, they had created this odd, crazy specter of, I guess, gulag thinking or whatever. I mean, the sun came up and life went on and people were better off.
Well, I think that that is one of the main reasons why the official media, why the TV networks don't have programs based upon, you know, set during the doctor's strike. It's embarrassing to a bunch of people for precisely that point. The media told ordinary people of Saskatchewan, you're living in a nightmare, nobody likes this socialized medicine, your freedom is at risk, and then, as you say, it's not one of the most popular things in Canada, the fact that, you know, we don't have to worry, at least theoretically, too much about having to pay our medical bills. And the media was on the side. The doctors were against it. I mean, you start thinking about it. The business community was against it. It's a pretty broad range of important interests. So I suspect that's why, you know, we don't talk about
it. It's a great story, very well told. We're speaking to Gary Engler. The title of the book is The Year We Became Us. And if you want to know what year that was 1962 when Saskatchewan brought in Medicare. And it turned out it was a virus. It spread pretty quick. But this tells a story on the ground. And I like the point, by the way, and something probably we all are contemplating now, because we have new struggles and fear is invoked of socialism, collectivism, all kinds of things. But your characters, and clearly it was the reality of the time, was an ideological battle. And people weren't ashamed to have ideology. And when I think of Ontario, we had a premier from the former CCF, became the NDP, and we had the NDP here, and they promised they were going to have provincial auto insurance. And a lot of people liked that. But the moment there was barking from bankers in New York, I understand, they just said, oh, never mind, and they just got rid of it.
Well,
but if they'd had ideology, like you're in 1962, folks that are in your book, They wouldn't have been afraid of that challenge. They would have said, yeah, we're going to do this.
Yeah, I think we owe a lot to people who were around. And, you know, people know about Tommy Douglas, and he gets the credit. He actually wasn't even the premier at the time of the doctor's strike. That it had been passed on to Woodrow Lloyd. Tommy Douglas was the leader of the federal NDP, the first leader by the time that the 1962 came along. And he actually, you know, both Woodrow Lloyd and Tommy Douglas paid a huge political price for creating and standing up to the powers that be in 1962. There was a federal election in 1962, and Tommy Douglas was defeated as, you know, the first leader of the NDP in his riding, and ended up having to move to a British Columbia seat to get into Parliament. And the provincial government, the CCF provincial government in 1964, was defeated by the Liberals, and some people say at least in part because of all the bad feeling that had been left by the doctor's strike. So, you know, while I do give most of the credit to ordinary people, to community groups, to unions, to church groups, that sort of thing, some politicians did stand up and were willing to pay a price for what they knew was something good, and I wish we had more politicians like that today.
Yeah, I have to say, it's one of the fresh, refreshing things about your novel is that it has a hero who says, I'm a socialist. And I thought, boy, it's been a while since I've seen that. It's like you're Upton Sinclair or something.
My favorite review of the book, the socialist Tom Sawyer, so...
I would hang on to that one. Maybe no, I would tell that guy. I think you're closer to Huckleberry Finn, or at least as Kit is. And the reader, our listeners should know this is Gary Engler's The Year We Became Us, Fernwood Publishing. But you deal. There's a lot of kid stuff in this book. I don't even know if I should call it kid stuff because it's contemporary discussion. We were just speaking to Ramsey Clark actually about guns. You have guns in this story. Kids have them and they use them, they think they're kind of something to play with. And I remember doing the very same myself. But also you have bullying. It's right in the middle of this book. This is, I don't know if you were at the time you were writing it, you realized. I mean, bullying is one of our top subjects now. I probably should ask you what you make of the various comments and ideas about solving the issue of bullying, because this your story starts with bullies and ends with bullies, actually. They're all over the place.
Well, I think the main comment I would make flowing from the novel is that kids have to learn to deal with power and power relationships, and they learn from adults and they learn from other kids. And I believe it's naive to think that adults have all the power in that education relationship. I don't think that they do. I think that there is some resiliency to kids' culture. And unless we recognize that and figure out ways of sort of altering it a bit to reduce bullying, to reduce the ill effects of that kind of thing, I don't think we'll be successful. And then the other thing I would say is that is it a big surprise that there's bullying when countries bully, when corporations bully, when, you know,
yes,
all the official institutions
exactly
do that kind of stuff?
You know, I was wondering if you were thinking of this kind of, it seems to be part of the novel, the two young people, the right-wing young lady, a girl and the boy, are writing to Jack Kennedy, who at that moment was bullying Cuba. And I recall people like a very famous economist, W.W. Rostow, saying when Kennedy asked, well, what do you want to do on the Bay of Pigs, for example, Rostow said, let her rip. I mean, that's ugly.
You know, that, you know, Yes, I'm happy that you picked up on that in the novel, because that was certainly my intention to make that parallel. The kids are giving advice to President Kennedy, but they're obviously also clearly learning from him at the same time. Mm-hmm. And what were they learning when the Americans were sending basically thugs and mafiosi to invade Cuba?
Mm-hmm. Now, this is Gary Engler. The book is The Year We Became Us. You also use sport, and we've spoken to Eve Engler, and I believe he's your son, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Now, of course, I was chatting to him not so long ago, but being involved in sports, it's clear from your book that a lot of good things can come out of sport if the people, like some of your characters, what they can do and to overcome the kinds of problems, social problems that come into the sporting arena.
Well, I think that a lot of the things kids learn, you know, today and back in 1962 were from things like organized sports. I know I certainly learned a lot. Most of the baseball stories in that novel in The Year We Became Us are things that actually happened to me or to one of my brothers playing baseball in Moose Jaw. And,
I'd have to say, you're the first 12-year-old I know who could throw a screwball. I mean, that's a hell of a pitch. They told us not to do that.
Yeah, it's bad for your arm. Actually, my the main character is kind of a composite of myself and my brother Jerome, who's 4.5 years older than me. And I do have to confess, although he, living on Vancouver Island, might not be listening to your radio program, but he was the better pitcher.
I was the one who
could throw the screwball, though, at age 12.
I'm glad. I bet he was proud that you you made the two of you into the best pitcher anybody ever saw in Saskatchewan.
Well, a
socialist, which is, that's what's heartening.
Well, and that's actually historically accurate. We were both socialists at the age of 12. I think it must have been the water in Moose Jaw. It's a very...
You bring in all kinds of wonderful people. You have this Sister Veronica who, you know, people, again, they use words like Catholic, Protestant, etc. And we forget the actual functionaries within these systems who are really wonderful people. And it sounds like the characters benefited. I suspect you did from association with a figure like this woman.
Yeah, no. Two of my favorite teachers of all times were nuns in St. Michael's Elementary in Moose Jaw. So that is indeed historically accurate again. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, I think that, you know, making generalizations and painting things like a church with one brush, one color, is never historically accurate. And that's actually what I really enjoyed about writing a historical novel. I think in fiction allows you to get the nuances across in a way that nonfiction really doesn't allow you. I spent 25 years as a journalist at the Vancouver Sun, and I have to say the freedom that fiction gives a writer to describe, you know, what people were feeling, what what kids were doing, like you say, the way that, you know, it's not just the church, there's, you know, the Sister Veronica that you really like, all those kinds of things you can do in a novel, and you really can't do them in a newspaper story or a book of nonfiction, you know, written about 1962. Mm-hmm. So that was very, very enjoyable.
Yeah. I tell you, it also reads like it'd make a pretty good script. So if we had a Canadian film industry, maybe that'll be our next task. We'd have to turn it into a film. Gary Engler, we're very grateful that you took the time. The Year We Became Us, nice novel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil.
Okay.
Really appreciate it.
Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that is Gary Engler. The book is published by Fernwood, and it tells the story of the fight for Medicare, the successful battle for Medicare led by CCF in 1962. Yeah, Phil.
Can I tell my memory? In 1962,
go ahead.
I didn't know what Saskatchewan meant. I didn't know where it was, and neither did my neighbors. And I used to ride the commuter train to New York City with stockbrokers. I lived in the suburbs, and I used to listen to their conversation. And all we learned, what I did learn from listening to my neighbors, was that there's a place called Saskatchewan. It's here in the continent someplace. We don't know exactly what it is. And the communists have taken over. And I thought, that's pretty exciting.
Don't tell the president. I'm glad you did tell that story. One quick comment on media and all that. We were speaking to Ramsey. I want to make sure I've just register this. The Toronto Star, Globe Mail, and others, CBC, have taken about last week started saying that the Russians are backing away from the Syrians. That is a theme that's being struck to make the crisis more dangerous. In fact, they have not, but it tells us that somebody is up to something, because that's called disinformation, and that's to set the stage for some new action against Syria, and so everybody ought to be on their toes. Well, you know, on our website we say, trust everybody, but cut the cards. This is Phil Taylor for Phil Conlon and Carol for the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. We'll see you in the future.